Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Promised Land, a show about Manchester United with Scott Saunders and Rob Blanchett. We're back again, and there's a lot of meat on the bone to talk about today. Erik ten Hag has done a sit-down interview with Gary Neville and essentially explained why Man United are crap this season. Yeah. And he has also said, we wanted to sign Harry Kane. We wanted to sign Frankie de Jong. These are the reasons why Man United have missed out on the Champions League and are muddled in mid-table, having lost 17-plus games this season. Although, three games in 2024, as he pointed out. So, yeah, interesting. We will, Rob and I will be talking about that today. We'll also talk about Jadon Sancho, who is now the best player in the world after 13 dribbles in a Champions League semi-final. He must be worth £150 million, is all I can say. So
just for all our audiences, Scott operates in sarcasm. So again, if you're listening to this and you don't understand the language of sarcasm, Scott doesn't really think he's worth 150 million, but we'll get to that later on.
I have noticed, yeah, that people don't detect sarcasm. But it's a lot easier to say it, like to verbalize it. Yeah. So hopefully people will get that from my tone of voice, but especially on things like Twitter or X, it's you can't put anything sarcastic out because people think
podcasts as well. Podcasts, like, you know, like people will like read tone of voice because you're saying it, but other people can't read your tone of voice. So I think that's why sometimes on YouTube, come to the YouTubes and look at us, because you can see it on Scott's face that he's being sarcastic, because he's not actually making a point that he'd like to sell Jadon Sancho for 150 million.
Well, I mean, if somebody bid 150 million as his market value, I think he'd take it at the moment.
Of course you would.
But you know, he was worth 12 pence on Tuesday, and now I tell you what, wow, what a football player. I actually like Jadon Sancho. I actually do. I want him to have a good career. It's just the fickle nature, the reactionary recency bias of football. Everything around football does my head in, and I wanted to kind of get into that a little bit today. I'm sure there's other people like me. I'm sure there's people who think I'm an idiot, but you know, it is what it is. Anyway, Rob, what's going on? How you doing?
I'm good. Really pleased Eric's done this interview. I think it's a really good interview. So if you haven't listened to it, obviously today's show, we're going to really break it down and talk about it. So if you haven't seen it, go see it. We don't work for the people that made it, by the way, but please go see it, because it's a really valuable, I think, resource for United fans to hear what Erik ten Hag really thinks. Because I think he kind of does explain where he is and why he is there, but he also does double down on one or two points that he believes that he's kind of sticking by. And I think Gary Neville did a wonderful job of pitching the questions just right to him, of being purely about football and about what we're seeing. And I think Erik does his best to answer the questions. You know, I don't think he avoids anything too much. And we'll break that down today.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple and Spotify and give us a 5-star review. There is no other option but a 5-star review. Please do that. Watch us on YouTube, where you can like the stream, subscribe, leave a comment, notification bell, hit them on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, etc. So you never miss a show, whether that's audio or whether that is video. And follow us on social at @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B, and @TPLMUFC. My Twitter account this week has been doing relatively well, in the sense of I merely pointed out that Jadon Sancho's goal contributions is 3 goals, 2 assists since he joined Dortmund in January, and he is now the best player in the world after that many dribbles against Paris Saint-Germain. Yet the numbers are exactly identical to Antony, who is the worst signing in Man United's history. So that was quick to point that out. Although I will say he did have a good game. He did have a good game against PSG, and I'm very happy for him. But I think the react, I'm ticked off today. I was really happy yesterday. Like I was really happy yesterday having seen that performance. But I think just the noise around everything really gets in the way of
turn
context.
The noise down, Scott. Turn the noise down. It becomes it's just less annoying.
Just a bit annoying. Anyway,
Jadon did play well, didn't he, in the semi-final? And do you know what? One thing Jadon Sancho can say to both you and me, and to Erik ten Hag and all Man United fans, is that I'm in a Champions League semi-final, and you're not. And that's it in football, isn't it? You know, bragging rights and all of that quite often. So, yeah, he had a really good game. We'll talk about him in a kind of wider aspect because I think his better performances for Dortmund suggest that there is still a footballer there. And that means that he's valid. We have to talk about him somewhere because guess what? He plays for us. He actually works for Manchester United still. So we have to kind of
That is what also people don't understand as well. It's like, oh my God, look how well, how much United have failed this kid. And yes, they have. They absolutely have. But also United planned in January to send him out on loan. So his value would go back up and he could play well, he could play good football again. Yep. So
this is the plan.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
So working. it's actually a benefit to the club that owns him, which is Manchester United.
Maybe even Dortmund will go, do you know what? We don't want to give you 70 odd million, but we'll give you something. You know, would you like one or two of our other players that you quite fancy in our squad? Maybe we can do some negotiating there. So yeah, it's actually working perfectly because you want Sancho to play well. You don't want him to sit on the sidelines and be a failure. So yeah, we'll get into Jadon a little bit more later on in the show.
Just one more thing. Borussia Dortmund's social media account official one said, you all owe him an apology. We were always in block capitals familiar with his game. Hopefully you are familiar enough with his game to pay £150 million to re-sign him, since you are so familiar with his game. Anyway, I think you've probably got from the first 6 minutes of this the tone that I'm going to be going with for today's episode.
No offense to social media managers in football, but like you all need to learn how to do Twitter a little bit more. And I'm bothered and irked by that, Scott, that football clubs now want to talk like their fan channels almost. And it's a bit like, you know, grow up. Even the whole Aston Villa thing, you know, the other day with what football club is it with the decision with the penalties? I've lost it. Forest, not Aston Villa.
Yeah, God. Forest.
Forest coming out and going, boo hoo hoo, it's so wrong. He supports Luton. Like, Jesus Christ, this is supposed to be a profession, supposed to be professional. So, yeah, some of that, I think, about Jadon there, it's laughable, really. And I think people should completely ignore it because I think it feels like it's like a 12-year-old at home with the Dortmund account going, let's get some interaction here, and guess what, it worked.
Yeah, interesting. Anyway, right, let's talk about Ten Hag, shall we? Because that's the thing today. Gary Neville has gone and sat down with Erik Ten Hag and asked him real football questions about why are things going badly? What is the style of play and are you happy with it? How much of a difference would Harry Kane have made to your team? And he essentially said, yes, we wanted to sign Harry Kane. We wanted to sign Frankie de Jong. He actually put the names of the players in Ten Hag's mouth and he talked about them.
Yep.
There's lots and lots to get into here. And like Rob said, if you haven't watched it already or listened to it, you should. If you're a United fan, you should. You should listen to him because it's very, very easy. And I watch every one of his press conferences, right? And I listen to everything that he says, whether that's pre or post. And I think there's one moment in this where he says, I have to be conscious of the players as well. So everything you might hear, don't necessarily take that as face value. He might be protecting the players that are in his dressing room, which everybody is hanging him out for essentially saying about Jadon Sancho. He didn't train as well as everyone else. And that is all he said, by the way. He didn't train as well as everyone else. And yet he is a demon for calling up for make humiliating Sancho. All he talked about was his training performance. But I think he gets a rough ride. I think he does. There's a lot of context, and I've said this repeatedly on this pod. There's a lot of context explaining why United are... Look, nobody's happy with the season, and he essentially has said that he's not happy with the season either. So don't go thinking that he's... The football that you see is, wow, that's Ten Hag ball. It's not. It's not complete. Maybe there's some elements of it that works. Maybe there's some elements of it that aren't complete yet. He pointed to personnel, pointed to injuries, pointed to not having a consistent back four. I think he said 47-ish matches this season or something, and 30 different back fours.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of depth in this. There's a lot of topics, and we'll try our best to pick out the best bits. But Rob, your general thoughts, first off, on the interview as a whole.
Brilliant interview, as I said. I think we need to see kind of more of these from managers, to tell you the truth, because I think if I'd had Gary's privileged position there to be able to talk to Ten Hag and give the questions, that's the kind of questions I'd ask him, is the hard stuff, is because that's the stuff fans really want to know. We speculate over things and sometimes we talk around subjects, but we're only really feeding off the bits that the football club give us and that sources give us and that Erik ten Hag will talk about. And I think in there, Gary, you said Gary specifically names. And I think the big takeaway, Scott, for me, so we'll break it down, is that he says that he's kind of wanted United to sign better players. That's kind of the big takeaway at the top of the interview. He says, when we talk about Harry Kane, he says, if you give me Harry Kane and I get a 35-goal-a-season striker, great, we're in business. But if you give me Hoyland, and he does specifically mention Rasmus, but he's nice about him. He says, you know, he's a kid, you have to work with him. And again, that's totally true, is that we said when we signed Hoyland, this is not going to be Kane. Like we did shows on that, didn't we, Scott? Where we went, if you want goals, you're going to get Kane. If you want potential, you go get Hoyland, but ideally you get both. Like, so you got both covered, but United didn't do that. So that's how I kind of feel about it. I feel that Erik is justified in a lot of the things he's saying. I think the big contentious point is where he feels that his plan has worked to a certain element, and his proof in that, he says, is multiple cup finals. Yeah, he says that we've been to multiple cup finals. United weren't like that before I arrived. And he talks about the injuries. I think, again, that's justified. And he kind of says last year was a success, third and the League Cup. But and this is the but, you know, I don't think in the body of work what we've seen for this 12 months, even with the injuries, that he can really stand by that 100% and say that his brand of football, his methodology, because he talks about that, Scott, says, I look at the numbers, I do the metrics, all the stuff we talk about that's boring and fans go, oh, it's boring stuff, XG, XA, I'm not interested. He looks at everything and he has to put out a football team every week. And I think to an extent he's done all right. But I think 17, 18 defeats in a season, you have to dig deeper and say, well, why is that? And I think United's brand of football has been partly because of that. And he says, if I'd had my players fit this year, it'd have been fine. I don't know. How do you feel about that, Scott? Do you think we'd have been where we wanted to be?
I think there's an element of, I believe him. I think there's an element of truth to it. My gut has always told me that I think this is the guy. Ever since he turned it around after Brentford. Right, my gut's always told me I think this is the guy who can actually come through and help turn United back in the right direction. You've got to remember, right, that as much as he's talking about like defensive troubles, right, and you can look at, oh, he's still got Dalot, he's still got Wan-Bissaka, he's still got Maguire, and maybe, Shaw's missed all the season. Martinez has missed all of the season, right?
Yeah, it's huge.
And I know they were like early in the season, there were bad performances and the issues you see now were still present earlier in the season. But it takes teams a long time to get used to a style of play, especially when it's such a drastic change. And I know people will point to, oh, well, Postecoglou managed to do it in about 3 weeks. And look at Glasner, different kettle of fish. I'm sorry, people, but Tottenham Crystal Palace versus Man United, it's absolutely no comparison. The pressure is so much different. It is so much different. Yeah. If Tottenham lose a game, how many games Tottenham lost in a row?
Loads. They're rubbish. I watched them last night.
But it's Tottenham. But it's Tottenham. Exactly. It doesn't matter. Crystal Palace. Does anybody like? If Glasner has he won all the games that he's played?
No, I don't think he's won all the games.
But it's fine because he changed
his
style.
But it's different to Hodgson, so people have got the upside, isn't it? So it's like, Hodgson did this, but he does that. So, yeah, I guess.
Also, I will say this. Like, I'm sure Glasner will forevermore be playing this style of football and it'll forever work, right? But you've got to think about this. And I'll go back to Martinez. United do not have another central defender in their squad at all who is the same as Martinez. They don't have a direct replacement. Ideally, I think you probably say that Ten Hag wants two Martinezes to play, one left, one right, and then probably understudies. I'm not talking about the physical stature. I'm talking about the ability to play the ball under pressure, the ability to push up, the ability to be intense, all of this. What he's had to deal with this season is no left back, no Martinez. So he's had to then find other defenders who've been bought by other managers. Oh, but he's brought Johnny Evans in. He's 36 years old. You can't tell Johnny Evans to play the Ajax way at 36. I'm sorry. No. He's essentially broken. You've got Rafa Varane, who's never really done that. Real Madrid have never been famed for their amazing progressive style of play. They just win. He tried to sell Harry Maguire last summer and they couldn't do it because Maguire didn't want to go because they gave him a big contract. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, you can look at Aaron Wan-Bissaka and say, technically, you're not there. Like, everybody can see that. Yeah, United bought him for 50 million. And people look at those facts and think, oh, well, United have spent a lot of money on this squad, so therefore these players should be able to do anything any manager wants. It's simply not the case. And you might have a better chance of doing it if you could name the same regular back four. But you don't. You can't. And yeah, I really think that people want everything yesterday. And when people say that Ten Hag hasn't changed the style, he hasn't changed anything really. What United lost their first two games of last season playing a style that Ten Hag wanted to play. He quickly saw that they couldn't do it. He changed the style. They kept the most clean sheets in the Premier League last season. Mm-hmm. And they did. I know they conceded 7 at Liverpool. That's a different issue. That's mentality. But they conceded... they kept the most clean sheets in the Premier League last season. Now people are saying this season, yeah, but I want to see something different from him. Yet you're also saying, I want to see a style of play. If you don't practice the style of play repeatedly, day after day, after day, after day, and in matches, how can you ever transition the style of play from one to another? You can't. You can't just say, one day we're playing this style of play. The next day, oh, we're gonna play defensive and we're going to make sure that we don't concede goals. Yeah, everyone will want this pure football, this pure, like, entertaining possession-based football. And he simply doesn't have the tools for it. And I can essentially guarantee you, if another manager comes in and nothing above the manager had changed, you might get an instant reaction out of a coach like Thomas Tuchel, but ultimately it will then fall off and go wrong because that's the pattern we've seen for 11 years. Sorry, I've gone on for a while there, but like I can keep going, but... that's kind of how I feel. And I'm glad he's done the interview. I'm really glad he's done it.
You should keep going, Scott. I think your opinion is totally valid on it. Absolutely, 100%. I think the counterpoints for a lot of it is that one of the things that came out the back of the interview here is that Eric really doubles down that his way is the right way. Okay, so he kind of talks about that. And, you know, when he's asked about injuries, Gary Neville says to him, you know, are the injuries just injuries? Like, what is this? Like, surely you look at the data and all this. And he says, yeah, I do look at the data. And sometimes it's just bad luck. And I absolutely agree with that, 100%. I think, you know, this year, if you'd had a completely fit squad, I think Man United would have been better. I don't think that's a massive leap of faith to say that. Like, come on. Like, we know that's how football works. So if you've got a fitter squad, you do better. I think the crux here, and this is the crossroads for him, is that he's now got a new technical director in the building. There's going to be a new sporting director in the building very soon with a new CEO. Yeah. And I think that if it was the old guard, if it was the Glazers with, you know, their guys and the two people that have been there running the club for years, I think there's less of an urgency here to think about maybe changing anything or anything like that. The problem for Erik ten Hag, Scott, is that if he's going to double down and say this way is the right way and you need to give me better players to do it, then the technical director is going to look at that and say, well, if we disagree with you, you are not going to be our coach. And I think that is where Eric stands today. And you said at the top of the show here, in top of your comments, that you think he's the guy, in inverted commas. And I never believe in football or in any job that there is the guy. I think there is lots of guys. I mean, there's lots of people that can do the job or do jobs in any professional circumstance. You just need to find them and identify them. And I think Eric 2 years ago was the best candidate, no doubt about it for me. And I think that's where you stood with it. But that was before Ineos, that was before Jim Ratcliffe, that was before any of this. The expectation has changed. I personally don't think in the last year that Eric, the style of play that he's formulating is going to get United into title contention, even with better players. Yes, you'll win more games, and you won't have some of the hot messes that we've seen this season with United. You know, some of it's been bonfires, and again, you can come away from every game, Scott, and go, well, if you'd had better players, you'd be all right. Cool. Yes, but is this style of play, if you inform it next year and you build towards it and you spend $200-400 million on it and you do get me my Harry Kane, and you do get me my De Jong, does that mean Man United are title contenders? I'm not 100% sure, because I think style of play for me, Scott, isn't about making me entertained. And I know a lot of fans it is. A lot of fans are like,
yeah, it will be for a lot of fans.
Yeah,
a lot of fans after 6 months of Tuchel, people will complain. I can guarantee it.
I'm up at 3 o'clock in the morning, the other side of the world. I want to watch Man United and I want to be entertained. Cool. We're at games. Fans talk about entertainment all the time. Cool. No problem. But this is an industry. It's about finding ways to win. And last year he did. This year he hasn't. And I know that's because, like, he kind of explains that he's trying to formulate towards a functional style of play. And he talks about Garnacho and Manu and all of this. I don't think those guys have been the problem this year. The problem has been the senior players. And some of the senior players, guess what, Scott, have actually played games and are not injured. So part of that is that. And I think for the bigger scheme of it is that when he sat in front of Jason Wilcox, he has to say to Jason Wilcox, right, my way, this is what I've been trying to do for the last 2 years, and this is what I'm going to carry on doing. And Jason Wilcox then has to decide with blank yes or no, Scott, is that we either stick with it or we're not going to invest hundreds of millions in this because we do not believe in it.
You can tweak it. And I think what people have... Ten Hag himself was responsible when he was brought in for a style of play, right? And that was transitioning from, and so was Rangnick, by the way, and also Ralf Rangnick, who's turned down Bayern Munich this week. Bayern Munich think he's good enough to be their manager.
He is.
Yeah, he was the worst Man United manager in history, according to some people, because he couldn't get a team of broken players to work for six months. He did it for 30 minutes against Crystal Palace, and then everything just kind of went to crap.
Yeah.
But like, there's a mishmash of players, and especially when Ten Hag first came in, there was a mishmash of players from Van Gaal, from Oli, from Mourinho, all in that squad of patchy injury records. Ten Hag was the one who was given the responsibility, essentially, of changing the way that United play, right? But now, if you're getting a new technical director and a new sporting director, and you're deciding on a style of play that you want the club to play, that should pass by every manager. So whoever replaces Ten Hag should probably become part of that structure where this is the way we want to play. Let's say we want to play possession football and we want to like strangle the life out of teams and score lots of goals. I mean, that's what everybody wants. That play the Man City way. It's not to my personal taste. I prefer the way Liverpool have played over the last few years, but that's what people want. So Ten Hag might have his ideal style of play, but now if you've got Wilcox and Ashworth and everyone else coming in, maybe they can meet in the middle and maybe that can change.
Yeah.
And I don't think Ten Hag's style is, you know, my way or the highway, you know, because he's already shown he can play a different way to Ajax last season.
Yeah, like he does talk about Ajax in the interview, and obviously there's that big contentious quote before where he says, I can never play like Ajax at Manchester United. And when he left it at that, you see, a lot of people did question him for it, because it's kind of like, well, we brought you to Man United to play technical football, so like, what? Why can't you do it? So he does explain that a little bit more in this interview. But I still think, Scott, like you're saying, they meet in the middle. And again, professionally, that's what you would do. Like, I'm sure they've had plenty of meetings. He said yesterday in his presser that him and Wilcox talk every day. That's good, because that's what you want. Your technical director needs to have that leadership with Ten Hag. What he will be saying to Ten Hag, Scott, is he will be saying, we need to see better. And I think that's, again, a very vague term, but we haven't this year. And I think that is why it's more disturbing, is that if you just even got to a certain standard, you could have coped with it, even with the injuries, even with defeats. And defeats are not everything, even though, of course, they're what pay the bills, wins and losses. But this manager has to get on board and find a way that works in the Premier League. Personally speaking, as someone that supported Ten Hag all the way and wanted him to get the job, I can't say with my hand on my heart here, on my breast here, saying that I think he's done that in 12 months. And that's just a professional assessment. It's got nothing to do with feeling. It's got nothing to do with gut. It's got nothing to do with the past. It's literally what we are seeing. So I think that's where he is with the management and with the management team, is that they will say, Like, he's been auditioning for his job, Scott, for the last 6 to 12 weeks onwards, yeah? And the audition hasn't gone well. It hasn't gone well. It hasn't. You beat Liverpool, and that was fun. But the rest of it has been nasty, even when you've got players who are superior to the opponent. And I think that is the difficult. You know, when Fulham come up and spank your ass at Old Trafford, yeah, that's not a good look, even when you've got injuries or whatever. So I agree with him totally. Like, I think playing out from the back, you bought a goalkeeper this year to be able to facilitate that. But maybe your other defenders don't help you play out from the back. But then if that's what it is, Scott, don't do it and lose matches because of it.
Let me take that Fulham goal as an example. Mm. He's often said it's like a house of cards. If you don't do it right at the top, you fall apart. Remember that goal that Fulham scored? That was from a throw-in on Fulham's own box, right? You were there. Throws in.
From their corner flag, Scott.
Yeah. Not enough pressure in the first instance. From Lindelof or Garnacho?
Lindelof was out of position. Lindelof's out of position. Garnacho's on the press. So Garnacho,
do you think he's going out and saying, like, oh, yeah, just don't do that?
No,
you know?
Of course not.
But that's an example, really, of how like things can, that will reflect on the manager, because ultimately he lost at home to Fulham. But if not following his instructions right through the very end of the match, then what really can he do? That Fulham break that first line, they break through the midfield. Then you have a defence which backs up instead of goes to the ball because they are back foot defenders.
Yeah.
Whereas Ten Hag wants front foot defenders.
Well, in that moment, the issue was, I think, the opposite. Sorry about that. Is that Maguire pressed and got done over the top. So Maguire actually should have sat in and covered Iwobi's run. So I think this is the issue.
Who was the other player?
Is that what on the inside?
Who was the other player alongside Maguire?
On the day, Lindelof. Lindelof
was left back at that point.
Oh, it's the left. So who was playing centre back?
I can't remember. But do you remember both players doing the same thing, or do you remember one doing one thing and one doing another thing?
I remember Dalot and Ahmad running back in front of us like mad people to cover, because as soon as Iwobi had gone over the top, you knew who was it on the right hand side who played it in across to Iwobi. Again, my mind is gone.
But
they out-sprinted United quite significantly. And I thought in that moment, at the end of the game, Scott, you really should sit in shape. Don't press. And then Lindelof's pressing high up at left back. You've got Maguire behind him. And it's like, you might get done there.
But you see that's what you want, right? You want them to sit in.
Not what
I agree. For what it's worth, I agree with you.
Yeah.
But most fans will come out and say, I want to see a style of play over and over again. And Ten Hag is trying to deliver that.
Mm.
So really...
And I think in that moment, he got those tactics massively wrong. That's why he lost the game. So I think the thing is, with Ten Hag, is that this is the whole thing about flexibility, is that I've always say, you know, I say every week he's a conservative, and I say that because he has his plan and that's what he wants to stick to. No problem with that. That's what a lot of managers do. It's a thing, you know, you want to stick to your fundamentals. But I think if those are your fundamentals, again, I'm Jason Wilcox, I've sat there and I'm going, all right, so in all of these scenarios this year where it's all gone wrong, is it just the players being bad? Or is it because the tactics haven't fitted the situation? And I think that's the issue here, is that part of that is that in that moment against Fulham, you should have doubled down and got the result and got the point and not committed suicide by pressing your team into an area where you're going to get done. And it's right. If Garnacho in the first wave of the press, Scott, goes to the player when the ball is thrown in, you're all right. Your shape's all right. But it was wrong. Even in real time, I remember watching it thinking, what are you all doing? You surely cannot be told to be doing this. Just sit in your shape and see the game that's finished. But that's just one example. And that's the thing, is that there is 15 or 20 examples this year where you can look at United in games tactics and managing games. And I think he's got a lot of that wrong. And I think that's the problem here, is that even against Coventry, Scott, you're 3-0 up. Kill the game. Kill it. Finished. You've won. Do it, manager. Don't care whether people talk about your style. Yeah, kill the game. Pass the ball around for 20 minutes, half an hour. The game's finished and it's okay. You've done well. You know, take the win. But I think this year with United is we've seen a lot of that, is that they are chaos personified. And chaos is always a bad look for a manager. Always is, even when you've got injuries, because it means you're not organised. And I think this year with United, that's what we've seen on repeat for 12 months. And that's where I think it falls down, Scott, is that I like Ten Hag as a person.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this. Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week. Now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Person and like what he is and why we brought him to the club, but I don't like that. I don't like being at Old Trafford and watching it like you said, a deck of cards fall apart. If you're the architect of the building, make sure it doesn't fall down. That's the first thing you got to do. It doesn't matter how pretty it looks. So I think United this year, they've missed a trick with that. And again, I think that's what Ineos will be saying on now day dot. They'll be saying, does this guy, is he the guy in inverted commas, or is there another guy out there who's actually got better record and could do it and won't cost us any money extra? Like, we're not going to go out there and pay fees for people. And I think that's the Tuchel issue, isn't it? Is that you're right, Tuchel will bore people. But you know what? Tuchel won't frivolously lose certain games. He just won't. He'll just double
Chelsea,
down.
Though.
Like, and he has a Bayern Munich as well, to an extent.
So like we just think, oh, but he's won the Champions League with Chelsea. So, therefore, everything will be magically fixed. Yeah, you bring Sancho back and play him on the right.
But what about Ribery in football is potent, and we know that. But also, when you're making the decisions at the highest level and you're the ones in charge of the millions and the millions and millions, it is difficult to sanction giving someone 100 million or 200 million or 300 million in transfer market, Scott, if you don't 100% trust their plan.
But we got to stop saying that. We're not giving Ten Hag the money. Like, this structure should not be giving any manager the money. They should be all together spending the money.
But you're empowering whoever the manager is. Yeah, but you are definitely empowering him, because the manager does sit on that committee to talk through these things. It's not just that, especially at Manchester United in the last 2 years, we've known how it's worked and we've known that Eric's been this kind of de facto director of football whilst running the team. It's a rubbish way to run a football club. Now, he's going to be given players now, which are good players, hopefully. That's what we want, isn't it? That's what we want Ineos to do. It's what we want Wilcox to do and Ashworth. But you are buying for the project. And the manager is not the most important person in the project, but he does need to be able to pick a team every week from players that work in his system. So if you don't think his system works in the project, then you do just look elsewhere. And I think that's where he is now, is that at the end of this season, is that, you know, if you beat City in the cup final, then you end the season on a really massive high maybe. But again, I don't know if the body of work in the last 12 months means that all of that means nothing. And I kind of feel that's how it is. It's very Van Gaal-esque. Is that Van Gaal, for those 2 years, played football that didn't work, and you win the cup, and then you get sacked the following day. So I sympathise with Eric with everything he said, but I think also he has to take responsibility for some of those style of plays and some of the function that he's put into his team, because it is dysfunctional, and that comes from the very top.
Ten Hag said on the style, he said, frustration at the style of play not working is not the right word, because I'm a realistic man. Last year when I came in, you make your adjustments, but at the end of the day, it's about winning games. From last year, we found a way to make a very successful team, which they did in context after they lost 4-0 at Brentford. He took them on a run. Ah, discipline. He took them on a really good run. I'm talking about an actual run, not a run of matches.
He went running with them
and then turned around, beat Liverpool, they won a Carabao Cup and came third, right?
Yeah,
he said this year we wanted to make the next step. He's talking about tactically the next step. Everyone will look at United last season and say, yeah, they were pretty boring, but they kept a lot of clean sheets, and he was criticized at the time for not having a style of play, right?
Yeah, Yeah, I don't think they were boring.
Now,
yeah,
what we want him to do is continue doing that from last season, essentially. He said, this year, we want to make the next step. We brought in a goalkeeper who can play from the back, a dynamic midfielder in Mason Mount, who's been injured all season, which he has, and a goal scorer in Hoyland, who's young and needed time. On one hand, we were quite confident we made the right choices and we can make the next step, but injuries are coming, and we made so many changes in some positions like the back four. We've now played 47 games and we had 30 combinations in the back four. And he goes on and on and on about it. But it's a good interview. We haven't even talked about Harry Kane yet.
Yeah, we need to.
So we do need to do that. Just one last thing. Have you ever thought about playing more defensive? We thought about this, but one of my objectives here was to bring in a proactive way of play. The players will return. So if you then adjust, go in a very defensive style and it doesn't fit the players we already have, then if you don't get results, everyone will lose the confidence. Then when the players are back, you have to return back to the proactive and you've lost many times. So this is essentially what I was saying earlier on. Like you can't just switch between one and two. Like you're asking for one style of play to be like completely solid and like shut games down. And maybe this, you can develop it on top of the style you're asking for in the first place. But what people want to see is modern football, a modern Man United style. And he's explaining essentially that he would like to do it. He's trying to do it, but there's actually a lot of issues which are outside of his control, like injuries, although maybe you could argue that they are in his control. But there you go.
Look, you said people want to see a modern style of football. I think, Scott, it starts first of all with competency. You got to show competency. So like he says, he uses the word proactive. That's a lovely word, especially in business. We use it all the time. Proactive this, proactive that. But being organized is like a prerequisite. You have to be more organized. I think with United, I think with Ten Hag, that has been one of the big bugbears, is that the defeats, the bad results, the bad goals, all of these things have come from innate disorganization. I've said so many times on this show, I've come away from Old Trafford and I'm not quite sure they're tactically prepared for the team they were playing. Now, you just said there as well that fans want to see one thing. If I'm Erik ten Hag, I don't care what the fans want. My job is to create a universe where my team wins games. And yeah, it's kind of entertaining, but I've got to play a brand of football that works where I don't concede goals. And if I've got tons of injuries, Scott, I need a plan B. I need a plan B to execute in matches. And year one, he got his plan B and he did it. And when he got Eriksen working with Casemiro and Bruno, that was the plan B. And it worked for 20 or 30 games. You win a cup, you get to the end of the season, you come third. And I think he did that really, really well last year. He diversified his tactics to make it work, that 4-1-5. This year, he's gone 4-1-4-1, a bit more rigid, and it hasn't worked. Yes, he's drilling this into the team, but even his answers there, Scott, like, you know, a versatile midfielder like Mason Mount. Well, is Mason Mount exactly what this system needs? Is that exactly what, it might have been better, but is this exactly what you're trying to do? Is Mason Mount working that number eight position? I think that's questionable. I think you can question that. When Mount is back properly, we'll be able to see it better. And unfortunately for Eric, he has been injured all season. So that's totally, you know, on it. But we can go to the Bruno debate again. You don't play Bruno in the 10, you play him in the 8, and he looks half the player. So that's again on you. That's the manager's decision. Rashford, when Rashford's played poorly, you're picking him. There are other players in your squad that you could pick, you know, maybe try something different, but he's trying to double down on his conservative principles about how he wants to develop this squad. So look, I think the thing is that we can argue all day about it and all of these things, but I think that ultimately the responsibility for the performances comes down to the manager, especially for 12 months. I have a lot of sympathy for him because I think he came into a very broken football club and he had to mend lots of things on the fly, but we're at a different point now. I don't think we're as broken. I think we have more of a plan. And we now have to decide whether Erik ten Hag fits that plan. And I think that's a big question now to be answered in the next few weeks.
You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your pods. As a reminder, we're on YouTube and Apple and Spotify on video and audio and audio. So please get over there and subscribe if you have not done already. And yeah, keep supporting us. Drop a comment as well, or a 5-star review. We would like that.
Yes, please.
We will continue with this Ten Hag bit. I don't know how long we're going to run here, but let's talk about Harry Kane.
Yes,
because we do want to do a bit of Sancho as well, and Michael Olise as well. Harry Kane. Now, are you surprised that he came out and just effectively said, "Yes, we wanted Harry Kane, and we didn't get him"?
No, I'm not surprised, really, because it's the truth. Like, we did shows on it because we knew it was the truth. So like, people always say to us, how do you know stuff? And I always say the same thing, don't I? We're not going to tell you how we know, but we do know. And we know that United wanted Kane and approached Kane and wanted to do it, and Harry Kane said no. So, like, we understand why, but I think the thing is with Harry Kane is that Man United, definitely this season, Scott, to make the jump from last to this, needed someone who was going to bang the goals in at least, and, you know, you ended up with Hoyland. And that's why also, Scott, I don't get on Hoyland's back now, like people are getting on his back the last few weeks, because I think he's a young kid and you've got to develop him and feed him and all of those things and teach him. So if you've got Harry Kane, I think, yeah, again, you'd have scored more goals. You might not have won the title. Look at Bayern Munich. They've not won the title, have they? And yet you've got this player who's got 35 goals in 35 games. So, but United need that. And I think when you go into this transfer market, Scott, that is again something in the summer we're going to have to talk about, because you might need to supplement what Hoyland does, not just say, well, everything's on your shoulders, mate. You go do it at 20 years old. You might need someone a bit more experienced. You can put the ball in the net through like normal function. And Kane would have been that. Kane would have come in, I think, and led that front line and given United so many different options. And I know a lot of our audience didn't like the Harry Kane chat at the time. They got on our backs. Oh, we hate Harry Kane. We don't want Harry Kane at Man United. Well, this is what you get. If you don't have a player like Harry Kane, then you're going to have to expect that things might be a little bit slower than you want.
Yeah, he did say that. And also at the time, it's worth doubling back on like the reports that we did on 90 Minute at the time. He wanted Harry Kane and another striker who was younger. That's he what wanted he both. Wanted.
He wanted Hoyland as well. Yeah. And now, we advocated that, didn't we? We said that. We went, you got no strikers, you need two at least.
Like Martial, like, bless him, he's back in training. Like maybe he'll score the winner in the FA Cup final and he'll have a fantastic send-off. Imagine that. But you can't rely on that. You can't rely on Martial. You need... Well, when Hoyland's been injured this season, what have United done? They've had to fall back on Rashford through the middle or somebody else. And we know that doesn't work. We've tried it a few times with a few different managers. But you also, any other bits you want to pluck out of this? Because there's tons that we could do. But also, I don't want to give everything away. I would like people to go and actually watch it and listen to the guy and make your own mind up. Like, fair enough, that there might be things that you disagree with. But for me, we have a tendency here to watch and listen and take everything at face value. And it, of course, I understand. United season was terrible. It's been terrible. It has. And I understand if that's the way that you want to approach it. But also... we need to recognize the reason why United are, and the first thing Ratcliffe has done is rip out the top of the club. That's the first thing he's done. And Ten Hag had to deal with that. And every manager before Ten Hag has had to deal with that for the last decade plus.
Yeah.
There is a reason why Ratcliffe and Brailsford have gone in. The CFO has gone this week. The Jean-Claude Blanc is the new CEO until Berarda arrives. That is essentially all of it ripped out.
Yep.
It's gone.
And there's reasons
and
it's been for
replaced.
It.
And there's reasons for it. And there's context behind it. And Ten Hag has had to deal with that. And I know that in this interview as well, he said he's not said a bad word about Murta or Arnold or any of the people that brought him in. Do you honestly expect him to? Do you expect him to?
No.
You know, but you've got to look deeper. You've got to look deeper. Because if we keep going through these bloody phases of, oh, this manager's useless, isn't he? You'll never, ever fix the problem. Never, ever.
Yeah. And I think like Ratcliffe is the custodian of the football club now. And I always say, again, even when things are going wrong on a football pitch, you must go to the very top of the pyramid and look there. That's the CEO. It starts there with the CEO and the ownership. And that's, you know, we don't need to tell anyone here watching our show how bad the Glazers have been and what the Glazers are. We don't need to do that show ever again. But I think when you do the trickle-down effect, Scott, and you look at this, you know, as you said, we've not even talked about this week where obviously Patrick Stewart has been disposed, someone who's been at the football club a very long time. And Ineos have just got bored of waiting. They're like, we need to move all this on quickly. So Jean-Claude, you're in now. You're going to do this and we're going to start running things how we want to run it. Because of course, they've been asked non-stop, haven't they, for weeks about Dan Ashworth, and I think it's getting boring talking about gardening leave. So they're trying to, you know, expedite the speed of these things and trying to move things along faster. The problem now, Scott, is that as you do that trickle down and you get things right, eventually you hit the manager, eventually, somewhere down the line. And that's when you get to that point, which we are at now. It's the end of the season, and you've got a new technical director. And Jason Wilcox's job on day one and going forward will be to make sure where he answers to the people above him, the CEO and the sporting directors, is that he can look up there and say to Jim Ratcliffe and ring him up, this sporting project is on track. I'm giving you my guarantee. That's why you brought me here. I don't think you can say that today. And I'm not sure you'll be able to say that in the summer either. I think you'll only, the proof will be in the pudding next year, is that if you keep Ten Hag, if everything is better and the injuries heal themselves, you bring in better players and it's all just everything's better, then great. But it's a leap of faith. It's definitely a leap of faith. And when you're the guys paying the bills, you don't always have that faith. You quite often look at stuff, and I think Ratcliffe's come to games. We watched him at Wembley with his hand like this on his face, like, oh my God, this is bad. And guess what? We're all doing the same. So on one hand, don't get too high, don't get too low. You know, sometimes things do need time, and I'm all down with that. On the flip side, I don't actually think fans are wrong by wanting to see a more constructive, competent style of football that means that you don't lose games like you did against Fulham and everyone else that you've lost this year, because you could have avoided that. And Scott, you nearly lost to Coventry. It's not acceptable. You know, you nearly lost 4-3 to Coventry. That would have been the worst defeat in the history of the football club. So all those things have reasons, but at the same time, there are levels. So I think that's it with the Ten Hag interview. I'm glad he did it, because I think now these next few games are massive for him, really are. Like we say it every week, you know, like you play Crystal Palace. Can you imagine if you play, go to Crystal Palace and they school you?
They probably will, Rob. They probably will.
But okay.
Because all of the circumstances that he talked about are still there. Yeah, oh, Johnny Evans is back though. Great.
Crystal Palace have got 12 injuries. So, like, let's, like, you know, this is the whole point, is that we can all say that for ourselves and look at Man United, and that's cool. But you're also playing teams that have also got issues. So you shouldn't really go and get schooled by Crystal Palace. But if you do, then we have to have another conversation about it. And the technical director will be ringing up the manager and say, right, what happened? You know, why is that lad Elise and why is that lad Eze just dancing through your midfield because you haven't got one? What's all that about? Should you have a midfield, boss? So those things do matter. And these next few games are massive for him. I really do think that even going into the end of the season, I'm not sure if a decision's 100% being made, but I think that they are really analysing what this Man United team is trying to do. And that's what Erik ten Hag will live and die by.
Just one more note on it. I was quite interested by the fact that this interview even came about. I know me and you, we maybe differ in opinion on this, but I thought it was very interesting that this interview even happened. Like,
yeah,
I thought, is that a move by the club to alleviate pressure? Or would it be easier for the club to just not do it and sack him? I found that quite interesting.
I think what the club have done here, and I think it's the right thing to do, is they're giving Erik ten Hag the right of reply. So I think the way this works, explaining this maybe to our audience who might not know in journalist terms, is that Sky would have put that request into United's PR team and to the arm that's been put in by Ineos now. Ineos have changed all of those things. And they would say, we want to do this with Erik, we're going to send Gary Neville, and it's all going to be above board. And I think United and Ineos want to do that now. That's something they're interested in. It's not always what the previous administration was interested in. The Glazers certainly weren't interested in it. I don't think that they did it for the reason that you think. Like you said there, it might indicate that they're going to back Ten Hag. I think if they're going to back Ten Hag, in that interview, the manager would have said, I've spoken to Ineos. We're all in agreement. We all feel good about it. I'm going to be here next year by hell or high water. Whatever happens now, and I think Ineos would have said the same thing. And I think they would have all doubled down, because they've had conversations about it. I don't think that's where we stand. I think the interview itself just indicates that Sky did the right thing in pitching a proper interview, a football interview. Because let's be honest, half of the media stuff out there now is not really proper football stuff. It's wanting to know about an individual footballer, isn't it? Or what they're doing because they're doing tweets. You know, that's part of the media now, isn't it? This was a really good football interview that gave Ten Hag a platform to explain what he's trying to do. It's fair.
Imagine he ends up at Bayern. Thing. Imagine Ten Hag ends up at Bayern.
Ajax could end up at Ajax. Bayern. He's obviously got amazing. He's got amazing links at Bayern. Obviously, was Bayern B manager there, so wouldn't surprise me if he ends up somewhere. And as I said, if he did leave Man United, it's not the end of Erik ten Hag. He will definitely find jobs. He's still got, I think, that reputation. It's just that the reputation has definitely taken a knock in the last 12 months. But that's football, isn't it? Everything is up and down. Is that one year your flavor of the month, the next year you're not? So, I think Erik will be all right, one way or the other.
Right, let's talk about Jaden. Because he's playing
your favorite Jaden.
No, I like Jaden Sancho. I'm going to say this first. I really like Jadon Sancho. He's a very, very good football player. I really enjoy the way he plays football, right? What irks me so much is he hasn't been that good, honestly.
No.
He hasn't. But you'll see like a little compilation of him doing some like little tricks in a Bundesliga game or scoring a goal.
Hmm.
I think he scored one the other week in a game they lost 4-1, yeah. I want to say. And that was to Bayer Leverkusen.
Cup corner, yeah. It's a good goal.
That was Bayer Leverkusen. Leipzig, it might have been. It might have been Leipzig. I just find it quite interesting that away from Man United, Man United have not used Jadon Sancho properly. But people will point at Erik ten Hag for being really managing him terribly, right? And it completely stripped back the context. There was two other blokes who in charge of him, Ralf Rangnick and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who also couldn't get a tune out of him for 2 years before ten Hag, or however long it was. I think it was 2 years, wasn't it? Sancho's now left and gone to Dortmund and has had a fantastic match in a Champions League semi-final against Borussia Dortmund. So much was made of the amount of dribbles that he produced. There was one moment where he dribbled through midfield and gave the ball away, but still counts as a dribble. The dribbles count as extra goals, the coverage is so. If he did that many dribbles in a match for Man United, would we be going, "Wow, how many dribbles did he do?" Or would we be saying, "Where's the output?" You know, this is what irks me so much. But the fact of the matter is, Jadon Sancho has gone to Dortmund, played well in the Champions League semi-final against PSG, and now United's plan of loaning him out to inflate his value and better his reputation and correct Sancho's mindset and get his confidence back has worked.
Hmm.
Whether he comes back or whether they sell him. I just find it really funny, and I'll just end up with this. If you haven't seen this already, Jadon Sancho, I said this earlier in the show, Jadon Sancho has had such a good season that his output since January is the same as Antony.
Mm.
And everyone looks at Antony and says, well, he doesn't pass the eye test.
They're the facts. You know, there's no doubt goals and assists. There's you know, he's got no more than Antony has in that period. So I think just in the first bit you said this, Scott, about being irked by it. Like, first of all, Scott, turn TikTok off, man. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
it's not TikTok, Rob. It's bloody Twitter.
It's Twitter, exactly. So turn Twitter off. Don't scroll. Doom scrolling. Just don't scroll. Because I think the thing is with Sancho, and with any player, like, it was the same with Pogba, wasn't it? You know, like, you can always find when Pogba wasn't playing well, you could find a video which shows how great he is. Like, that's just football, isn't it? And that's Rashford's the same, isn't it? Rashford this year is hot garbage. But you can do a compilation of Rashford stuff that looks like he's the best player that's ever played football. So none of that to me matters. I'm not going to go down that way. I'm not going to get irked by that kind of stuff. You're right in what you said, is that Man United loaned him out to build a market for him. And that's what he is doing. And I think what the Champions League semi-final performance shows with Jadon, touched on it at the top of the show, is that he's still a valid footballer, that he's still a player that if you use him in a certain way, you might get more from. Now, this is a bit I'm going to pull up on because I think this is really important. And I think the thing is with Jadon, as you said, with Rangnick, who wanted to play a proper overt gegenpressing style, very, very hard gegenpressing style. They did it for 20 minutes against Palace. None of them could do it after that. I think when you look at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Ole wanted to play 4-3-3. Every time United play 4-3-3, they get smashed in the face every single week. He couldn't play it. He couldn't get to 4-3-3. It was a nightmare.
I'll also add in, just before you continue, the Ronaldo point as well. That was added in.
Absolutely.
Then it was Rashford, Greenwood, Sancho. That was what it was meant to be.
That was close to be, you know, the way that we're going to run the football club going forward, playing a modern style of football, whilst also, you know, dribbling, possession, being able to counter-press, but it's everything, all the stuff that you want them to do, all the good stuff. And what I'll say this about Jadon Sancho, right, about this and Erik ten Hag, because this is all that matters now. The past doesn't matter. It's about Erik and the player, yeah? Is that Jadon shouldn't have done the tweet. We know that, right? Jadon's form before the tweet was rubbish, utter rubbish, not proving himself at all. I think what we saw was last year was that the manager absolutely wanted to try and get more out of Jaden, sent him away to get his head right, to be able to, you know, to get well and to get ready. And you remember that moment when he came back and him and the manager hugging on the touchline?
I've referred to this this week, yeah.
Yeah, so I've not seen that you've referred to that, but that's the thing that sticks in my head. And I think about that because, again, if I'm the manager and I'm trying to win football matches and I want the best from my players, that's what I'm doing. I'm sometimes giving them a cuddle and other times I'm telling them they're not doing their jobs. I think the thing is with Eric is that he didn't say anything too bad in his presser when he said after the Arsenal game, which is what triggered all of this. I still say to this day, because it was lost in translation, I think, that the manager didn't need to say that it was about training, because it clearly got under the player's skin because he tweeted within 2 hours and it was out in the public domain. It became a mess. Very, very indicative of what Manchester United is, Scott. It's just a mess from top to bottom. And we were still in the Glazer period at that time, weren't we? I don't think might not happen now going forward with this administration, with Ineos. But again, you're at crossroads, like Eric is with his tactics, is that do you look at Jadon Sancho and say, this is the kind of play we do actually need, yeah? Or do we kind of squash that up, throw it away in the can, and we get another player who is a bit like him, but will maybe do the press a little bit more, will work a little bit harder, might have more fundamentals in the system? Because I think that's the truth, is that Jadon doesn't match Eric's principles for his system. Just does not the style of play. And I think you can also say, Scott, neither does Marcus Rashford. So that's a different conversation for a different day. But then you need to go fix it. So you either need to sell Jadon now, get Jadon out of the club, and that might be best for everyone. And then you replace him with a Jadon-like player who's a flair player, but also works and does all that stuff. Or you get rid of the manager and you bring Jadon back. So it's a real black and white question. And we said last week on the show, Jadon Sancho is one of Jason Wilcock's academy graduates at Man City. So he knows everything about Jadon Sancho. So we're going to see in the next few weeks, if United sell Jadon, we're going to see exactly what Jason Wilcock thinks of him. I think we might see the opposite, Scott. If the manager goes and Jadon says, oh, Dortmund win the Champions League. Can you imagine? Like, that would be mad. Like, you're annoyed today, Scott, and irked by videos. Imagine if they win the Champions League final and Jadon Sancho scores an overhead kick. Yeah. Like, then these things happen in football. I think Jadon Sancho might be on the first plane back to Manchester because I think they will look at him and say, right, can't get the value we want for you, but a new manager will be able to use you in the system. And guess what? Oh, Tuchel knows about you as well. You know, you've got Dortmund acumen there, background of how you play in the Bundesliga. And yeah, we think that Tuchel's coming in and he's going to be able to work with this player. So again, hypotheticals, but also in reality there, Scott, is that I think Jadon is a valid footballer. He's going to still have a career. He's 24. That career might be at Man United. It's just that it all depends on whether Erik ten Hag is there.
Well, we were going to do Michael Olise today, but I think in a little bit more depth. I know we touched on him just there, but I think we'll save it for another day.
Yeah,
mainly because he might play against United on Monday night.
Yeah, which... I think we might be licking our wounds after experiencing Olise. I'll just say one thing about Michael Olise is that positionally, he is the kind of player that you want. I did see you, Scott, respond to a few people on Twitter about Jadon playing on the right hand side, which is something we don't see at United, isn't it? He played on the left. And he does really well on the right, doesn't he? We've not really seen that. So maybe another manager looks at that and goes, well, we either spend the money on Olise, or maybe we give Jadon a go on the right. Maybe that's what we're going to do and play 4-3-3. I don't think we will ever see that under Erik ten Hag. And I worry if Olise came into the football club. I'm not sure Michael Olise fits what Erik ten Hag wants to do either. I really don't. I personally
don't think in terms of injury record. No, I'm not going to say it. I'm going to say it Tuesday.
Save it.
No,
bank I'll
save
it.
Right. But we'll wrap it there. We'll call it there. Like, please get involved in the comments and please get in touch with us on social media as well. We've dug into a lot today on ten Hag and what he said. Talked about Jadon a little bit as well. Talked about Harry Kane. Subscribe, please, to the show on audio, Apple and Spotify. You can find us there. Give us a 5-star review if you haven't already and watch us on YouTube where you can like the stream, subscribe and leave a comment and hit the notification bell so you never miss a show. And follow us on social at @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B and @TPLMUFC. We'll be back after the Palace game. United play Monday night. I think I'm going. So I'll get a nice little, getting a nice little look at whatever the hell that'll be. But we'll catch up after
And have a great weekend, everyone. At least United aren't there to ruin it. They play Monday, so great. Until then, watch the Ten Hag interview. Please do. And we'll see you soon for another Promised Land podcast. Until next time, from Scott and Rob, see you soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.